This is Radio Olin, KROJ 101.5 FM on your radio dial, coming to you live from our studios at Pueblo y Salud in the city of San Fernando. You're listening to Platicando y Mejorando, an inspiring program that will promote the health and well-being of our community through intellectual, physical, economical, political, and spiritual discussions. Stimulating discussions and listening pleasures will be enjoyed with experts and leaders in health, culture, music, art, and politics. This is your host, Silverio Pelayo, and today we have the pleasure of having our executive director here at Pueblo y Salud, Ruben Rodriguez. How are you doing today, Ruben?
I'm doing great, Silverio. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. On today's episode, we're going to be covering a bit of the history of the organization, who better to have here than Ruben, who was here since the beginning. Pueblo y Salud is a social and human services agency that focuses on education, prevention, organizing, mobilizing, and empowerment. It was founded in 1991 as a 501c3. Pueblo focuses on serving the Latino communities within the Northeast San Fernando and Antelope Valley with a focus on education, civic participation, health, culture, and drug and alcohol tobacco prevention services. So Ruben, can you talk a little bit about the logo?
Certainly. To start with, you know, it's I know our audience can't see it, but it draws attention to itself because it's kind of a unique logo in that it is it's a face, half human and half skeleton. It's a skull, and it's the mascot of Tlatilco, which you know, signifies duality. You know, everything has an opposite, a yin and a yang, if you will, a positive, a negative. And the mask itself is the mask of Tlatilco. In Mexico City, it dates back to about 1300 BC in the pre-classic period. The left side represents a live person, the right, a dead person. Duality, a pre-Columbian concept from the Olmecs, is expressed in the mask. The Nahuas of the period to whom the mask is attributed believed that life on earth was a transitional state, a bridge leading to another world, like the papalot, meaning a butterfly. You know, humans mature here on earth until transformed through death into a more wondrous and godlike creature. The mask has a special significance for us here at Pueblo y Salud because it represents one's desire to develop into the most perfect person one can become, physically, mentally, and spiritually. The organization believes that self-actualization is one's true purpose in life and that many obstacles exist which keep us from achieving this goal. The dehumanizing effects of economic and political oppression, racism, and discrimination are but a few of the most glaring examples. Some of you in social service might know, have heard of ACEs, which, you know, that historical trauma that, you know, in individuals, it leads to a multitude of emotional and health problems in later life. We kind of look at historical trauma, which maybe has followed us since the days of the conquest and all the tragic things that happened as a result of the colonization by, on our side, the Spaniards, and further north by the British and other parts of the world, the Dutch and the Portuguese, which were a lot crueler, I think, in some of the African nations. Here at Pueblo y Salud, our vision encompasses the tearing down of such artificial barriers for Latinos. And in doing so, we work towards the liberation of all world citizens. So, you know,
I appreciate that because it gives context to the work that we do. It deepens it. It gives it meaning beyond the surface, because one can look at this work on the surface, but I appreciate the deep rootedness of the work we do. For me, it's a great privilege, considering it's also, I appreciate that we contextualize it, this work historically too, with colonization, and you know, that could be a whole separate episode too, I feel like. Absolutely. But I do appreciate the logo, and I appreciate the history and contextualizing this work. So we're going to go ahead and take a short break. We'll listen to some music, and we'll come back, and we'll continue this discussion. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
All right.
Perfect.
Thank you. the year 1970, in the city of San Diego, under the Coronado Bridge, lied a little piece of land. A piece of land that the community of Logan Heights wanted to make into a park. A park where all the chavalitos could come and play in, so they wouldn't have to play in the street anymore and get run over by a car. A park where all the viejitos could come and just sit down and watch the sun go down in the tarde. A park where all the familias could come and just get together on a Sunday afternoon and celebrate the spirit of life itself. But the city of San Diego said, chale, we're gonna make a highway patrol substation here, man. So on April the 22nd, 1970, La Raza of Logan Heights and other Chicano communities of San Diego got together and they organized and they walked on the land and they took it over with their picks and their shovels and they began to build their park. And today, that little piece of land under the Coronado Bridge is known to everybody as Chicano Park. It began in 1970 under the Coronado Bridge in mi barrio in San Diego, where my people began to fight for Chicano Park, for Chicano Park. Under the bridge, under the bridge, under the bridge.
Hey.
barrios unidos. Que vivan los 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 barrios surcando el cielo de América, sangre de viento avanzando, forma de fuego en la noche, en ruina de allí. Canto del llanto del indio, voces del tambor tocando, flautas que hablan con Dios, me dicen así. Sangre y fusil y la tierra, gritando así. Manos de bronce en la tierra, flor de sudor van sembrando, esperanzas de los pobres nacen aquí. Piedras de ven, niños llenos de tormenta de nacer. Sangre y fusil y la tierra gritando explosivo llegó, ya van bajando los pueblos hacia la liberación. Sangre y fusil y la tierra gritando hacia la liberación, hacia la liberación, hacia la liberación. ¡Amén!
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is Platicando y Mejorando on KROJ 101.5. This is your host, Silverio, welcoming back our guest and executive director here at Puebla Salud, Ruben Rodriguez. We're going to go ahead and continue with our conversation on the history of the organization. We just went over a little bit on the logo, and now, Ruben, if you can talk a little bit about sort of the coming about of the formal nonprofit before the origins. How did it all go down? What was happening?
You know, it's hard to actually pin down when the group came together, but most of the board, the original board members, were they were teachers at Cal State University Northridge, Chicano Studies Department. Professor Alberto Ruiz, who did the previous segment, today's previous segment. We have Dr. Jose Hernandez and the other members, Jose de Paz, Hector de Paz, myself, who I was the founding board president. We had actually been working together as colleagues, in some of us in another job, and all of us, the ones mentioned as part of Chicano movement, we were involved in the, we started off with what we call the Chicano Round Table, where we were getting together to discuss electoral politics, and we started assessing ourselves. I think it was the monthly quota, so that we could contribute to political candidates. We had no representation in the Northeast San Fernando Valley, no Latino representation. So we started assessing ourselves, I think $25 each every time we met, so that when we did select a candidate, we would be able to contribute and support them financially to help get them elected. So that was kind of the political side of things. But then some of the members, Javier Flores, who was the founding executive director at the time, and still runs, actually still runs our Palmdale office, because we have the two offices, the one here in San Fernando and the one over there. We were getting involved in alcohol and tobacco issues. So we were getting together as part of the alcohol and other drug coalition, which was a countywide coalition. Another organization that now is now known as Chicada, their founding director, I believe at that time, got a state grant to provide technical assistance to groups throughout California to actually become incorporated and start get legal standing through the state and then the federal, so that we could apply for monies for grants to, you know, do the work that needed to be done in our community. So at that point is when we he gave us the technical assistance. We then got the articles of incorporation filed with the state of California. Once we were granted a nonprofit status, we then applied for the federal ID number so that we would be recognized by the federal government. And those were the legalities involved in forming the organization. That was, you know, that gave us a legal standing, I guess, a legal status.
What you mentioned the Chicano Roundtable. What year was this all going down? Like around.
You know, well, we incorporated in 1991, so this work was happening maybe 3 years, 4 years prior us meeting as a group. Some of us, we met actually on campus. Three of the current people still involved with two at the board level and myself, we actually met California State University Northern, the Chicano Studies Department. We were actually running the campus newspaper at the time, called El Popo. I think it's they stopped publishing it, and I heard they were trying to bring it back, but it was an actual newspaper. We would be there late at night laying out the newspaper. It wasn't like right now that we had, computers and Word and all that. We literally had to. The journalism department let us use their equipment. They had something called a line adjuster, and we would actually have to do the columns on a typewriter, and it would print it out in sheets and then kind of like a thick paper. Then we would cut it out and use wax sticks, and we would actually stick that on the newspaper template, you know, the size of a small newspaper before, so we would get it to the printer and run it off. So we go back to some of us as students. So I would say maybe 4, 5, maybe 6 years prior to us actually incorporating in 1991.
Yeah, so really the work, you know, when we first started this segment, we discussed the logo and the history. Mm-hmm. And you could say, I would say that this work really has there's a long line of history dating back to our ancestors and then maybe more contemporary, maybe to your time at Cal State University Northridge, and then maybe more recently in the 90s. We're going to go ahead and take another short break, listen to some music, and then we can go ahead and continue the discussion around maybe looking at you know, grassroots versus nonprofit, also the formal structuring of a nonprofit and what it takes to become a nonprofit for folks that are might be thinking about creating a nonprofit or interested, to get some input. So we'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back.
en la huelga no nos moverán. Unidos en la huelga no nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río. No nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río. No nos moverán. No, no, no nos moverán. No, no, no nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río. No nos moverán. Unidos venceremos. No nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río. No nos moverán. No, no, no nos moverán. No, no, no nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río. No nos moverán. No.
Welcome back. This is your host Silverio on Platicando y Mejorando on KROJ 101.5 with our guest Ruben Rodriguez, Executive Director here at Puebla Salud. Picking up the conversation, we were discussing you had mentioned the formal creation of Puebla Salud as a nonprofit. Can you talk about maybe a little bit of some, you know, the benefits, the challenges of a nonprofit versus just, I guess, not just, but a grassroots gathering or a group of folks?
Just getting together?
Getting together, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of advantages, and I would say a few disadvantages, only in the sense of some of the work that might be limited once you become a nonprofit that actually receives funding from a source. So the nonprofit is limited once it gets funding, only because there's some restrictions in the way the money gets used, and it really is the political work. But let me just go back so that maybe I can put it in context. An activist group or a group that's advocating for something or taking up a cause is obviously you need people that share that common interest and do whatever is required to do that, whether it's go to a town hall meeting, go visit elected officials or leadership, or organize a demonstration, a sit-in, some kind of civil disobedience, whatever. You know, that is within your First Amendment right of free speech to do so. But you're limited in the sense of you're not, it's a group of people who's responsible. Let's say you want to raise money, and then they'll say, well, you know what, there's a group of good people, but, you know, maybe there's that one that, you know, has some kind of a history, says you can't trust him with money or something, you know. The advantage of forming a for-profit is that, you know, you can open up a bank account, you elect officers, you have people that you can hold accountable for whatever happens within that organizational structure's activities, whether it's raising money, more importantly, spending the money, keeping a financial record, keeping track, you know, and continue to raise money, because the reality is any activity requires money. Even if it's, an unstructured group that says, let's go have a demonstration, somebody still has to come up with the cardboard to do the signs, the sticks of wood, maybe transportation. How do we get the people to, you know, that office or that congressman's office or elected official's office? So those are the differences. the limitation of a nonprofit basically is that you can still do all that. But the moment you get a contract or a grant, then you're limited to doing whatever you said you would do for the money that is given to you, whether it's counseling, whether it's education, some kind of advocacy. And the real barrier that's created by that is you cannot lobby, which I believe is wrong. Because you know, you're up against forces sometimes that, and I can get into that a little bit later, that have unlimited amount of monies to lobby for whatever they need done, whether it's to allow more liquor licenses in a community, to make marijuana legal. You know, there were millions of dollars spent on that, convincing our community to say and agree to having you know, a toxic, in my opinion, a toxic substance become legal in our community, and convince the people that it's healthy. The same thing that they did with the electronic cigarettes. You know, they market that stuff as if, and it's legal, it's unregulated, it has been unregulated up until the recent epidemic being caused by deaths and lung damage with a lot of the young people. You know, it's pretty much unregulated. And their lobbyists have carte blanche. They contribute money openly or under the table if some elected officials don't want it known that they're taking money. So there's reasons why. In our case, they say we cannot lobby. I was just saying why. You know, I don't agree, but I understand. What they're saying here is if you're getting government money, then you, Ruben, as an executive director, cannot run for office and use those resources to get yourself elected, you know, or to get a family member or a friend elected. So we understand that part, but I think there should be some modification to the rule, because if you're doing advocacy work to protect your community, I think you should be allowed. So those kind of the plus and minuses. If you're a corporation, you can raise money. And up until this this year with the tax changes, you could pretty much deduct everything you would contribute as a contribution on your taxes. So there's there was a tax advantage to the people that are contributing money to a nonprofit such as ours. And obviously there's limitations as to the money you raise. Your board of director in a nonprofit, it has to be a volunteer board of director. They do not get salary. They do not make profit the same way you do in the private world, in the for-profit world, which is one of the reasons I think we're having so many greed problems. Because, you know, the board of directors, some of them get exorbitant amounts of money for really little or no work once they've made their original investment. Obviously, they usually invest money if you're going to be on a, you know, a private for-profit corporation.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I doing the work that we do at TRL with the retail licensing, I'm sure folks can find that online.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, you know, for Pueblo y Salud, I, you know, the radio station, you know, I just started here with PYS, and to have this radio station here is like, I'm very grateful to be a part of it, and it's a very exciting for me. And I know that y'all worked on this particular project for a long time, and it's finally come to fruition. What's your vision for Pueblo in the near future? Where do you see Pueblo going, doing, tackling, if you could just speak on that a little bit.
Certainly. Real quick, just so we, you know, credit is given to where credit is due. The radio station project that we are, you know, on the air right now is actually, we are part of, or the supporting part of Ballet Folklorico Olin, which is their dancers, folklorico dancers. They have been around for over 40 years. And they applied for a license from the Federal Communications Commission to be granted what's called a low-powered FM station. And it was granted. And they were given what's called a construction permit. And they had a certain period of time to get the studio up and running, a transmitter up on the roof, an antenna up on the roof, and we were invited. I'm actually a board member of Ballet Folklorico Lin, and we were, you know, we were invited to be part of that, and we formed the Radio Lin 101.5 FM Board of Trustees, and we have been involved in raising the money and getting some of the programming, which is what you're listening to now. And we're on the air, you know, Saturdays and Sundays on the radio waves, I should say, and on the internet 24/7. But you're hearing Radio Bilingue, who is the ones we're streaming right now until we actually have additional programming. And we also have the Pachanga show on from the Cervantes Family Fund for Justice on Sunday nights from 7 to 9. So that's part of what we're doing as part of Radio Lin. And I just want to acknowledge that it's a partnership. It's a collective effort there.
So we have the radio. Look into the future. PYS television station? Or what's in store for the future? What, you know, any particular visions or goals?
You know, that on this side, on the communication side, I really had not considered that. But now that we've gone through this process, and as you all know, because I know you, thank you all, you've been learning, and you're, you know, running the equipment, and it's been a learning process, and a lot of work, you know, that we had not really signed up for, but it's I'm hoping it gives us a powerful tool to reach a broader base, a broader community, to do, you know, good work, improve the health and well-being of our community. So yes, about cable television show, I think that you cannot do it on Facebook, do a TV show. That's not that far-fetched. I mean, in the future, I hope we can do something like that. But in terms of the organization as a whole, I'm hoping, number one, that it somehow gets institutionalized, because this type of organization is difficult to sustain the work if you don't have the staff to do it, at least at the level we're doing now, in all the areas we're working in, you know, drug, tobacco, and alcohol abuse prevention. So I'm hoping to find some kind of source of funding that would be permanent, at least for the basic structure, you know, rent, some kind of administrative staff that would carry an eye into the future. I mean, I was board president on a board of directors and board president for Alcohol Justice, which has a yearly budget of over $1 million. And that organization, they do great work. We did great work when I was there, and they will continue to do great work. And their funding, it comes from the Buck Trust. So unless the economy of the whole country collapses, that funding will be available for perpetuity to continue that good work. You know, it was given by the woman, the wife, that something she inherited when she gave it away. She gave it for the good of humanity, and it funds three projects. And the one I just mentioned is the one that gets over $1 million budget. The other ones get more, you know. So I don't know what that trust is, and so I'm looking around. You know, I tell my board members, I hope one of you becomes at least a millionaire, if not a billionaire, you know, because that's what we need. But you know, we don't have you know, the guy from the computer mogul. I can't remember his name right now. Gates. We don't have a Bill Gates, or we don't have a guy from Amazon that's going to give us that. But maybe we can. What is it? Slim, the one from Mexico. Maybe
Carlos Slim. Yeah.
Maybe Carlos Slim can help us out, since I think he's Mexicano. Or, you know, he's the richest guy south of the border. So maybe somebody will set up a trust, and help institutionalize it.
So financial security,
A source of ongoing funding, you know, to continue the work. So we're, because you know, we have to compete every year for grants, right, and renewing the grants and that kind of thing.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Ruben, for joining us today and giving us a little bit of history and background on PYS and Appreciate all the good work that y'all have been doing for all these years. I'm feel privileged to be a part of this organization and doing good work here. So we'll finish off and thank you for the listeners also for joining us. Please join us again next week, or during the week, I should say, and then next week for our radio show. Thank you for listening. We'll close it off with a little bit more music, and we'll see you again.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Desde Texas a California, campesinos están luchando. Desde Texas a California, campesinos están luchando. Los rancheros a llore y llore, de huelga ya están bien pandos. El picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Ya tenemos más del año peleando con esta huelga. Ya tenemos más del año peleando con esta huelga. Un ranchero ya murió y el otro y así su abuela. El picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Un primo que tengo yo andaba regando diches. Un primo que tengo yo andaba regando diches. Un día con pagarulo y otro con sanaba biches. El picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Me dicen que soy muy necio, gritón y alborota pueblos. Me dicen que soy muy necio, gritón y alborota pueblos. Pero Juárez fue mi tío y Zapata fue mi suegro. El picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign,
conmigo toda la vida. Y ahora ando organizando la raza en todos los files. Y ahora ando organizando la raza en todos los files. Y muchos siguen comiendo tortillas con puros chiles. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Hay muchos que no comprenden, aunque uno les da consejos. Hay muchos que no comprenden, aunque uno les da consejos. La huelga es un bien para todos, pero unos se hacen pendejos. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. El picket sign.
Por eso es que cuando canto, canto lo que el pueblo siente. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy.
Como cantar es mi oficio,
yo canto el esfuerzo duro de construir el futuro con alegre sacrificio. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy. Voy al momento, se lo devuelvo cantando. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy.
Lo poco que doy le ofrezco con alegría y encanto.
Al pueblo le doy mi canto, porque al pueblo pertenezco. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy.
Con alegría serena,
canto lo que el pueblo siente. Y canto porque el presente no es de llanto ni es de pena. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy. Soy del pueblo, pueblo soy, y a donde me lleve el pueblo voy.
Del pueblo mexicoamericano existen mujeres lindas y valientes. Existen mujeres que saben luchar.